recorder? Could we have a roll call as soon as we get the mics going? We got a new system going evidently here, fellas, so we may have to juggle a little bit this evening.
Commissioner Clemens?
Here.
Commissioner Cisneros? Commissioner Tartaglia?
Here.
Commissioner Barker?
Here.
Chairman Nord?
Here. I want to note that Al Cisneros is excused absence. He's dealing with some medical issues at this time, so he has an excused absence. Could we stand for the Pledge of Allegiance, please? Attention. Salute.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Which reminds me, if you have a cell phone on, please quiet it down as I'm going to mine. John's the only one who gets excused for cell phones around here.
I'm on the earpiece.
He's got to keep track of all the kids rolling around the neighborhood. Okay, with that, I will introduce our new member of the Planning Commission, Ted Tartaglia, to my left. Welcome, Ted, back.
Thank you.
Ted was on the Planning Commission a number of years ago, and took a few days off, a few months off, and is going to come back and join us. So we're glad to have him. Jason Chavez place. Jason is took a change in his job position, which calls for more travel, I guess. And so he wasn't able to be with us often enough now. So he's not renewed his membership here. So welcome, Ted. Glad to have you here.
Thank you, George.
I think you know maybe with the...
We've all met. I know John fairly well.
There we go.
Chairman Nord,
and
also,
you,
excuse me.
Yes.
Excuse me. I'd also like to introduce a new staff member. Noe Martinez is our new city engineer.
Oh, okay.
He joined us beginning of this week or last week?
Yeah, I just read the paper and I knew we were going to get a new one, but I didn't know it would be this fast. Welcome. Glad to have you with us. Okay. We'll move into public comment section. If there is anyone in the public who would like to speak to something that is within the jurisdiction of this commission that is not on the agenda, this is your time to do so. So I would welcome you to come to the mic and pour out your heart. Okay, not hearing any. We'll move on to the consent agenda, which consists of the minutes of the January 7 meeting and the building report for the month of December. The minutes first, any corrections or additions to that? I did notice that going on the city's website now, we can not only read the minutes, we can listen to at least some of the, maybe all of them now. I don't know how far back we go here. David, what do we got? We got the Audible on the website, huh?
We do. Might go back as
almost 2 years.
There may be some sporadic spots. We're working out getting everything on there and complete all the time and see what we could do to go away from having these verbatim minutes.
The moral of the story is be careful what you say, right or wrong. it's on the tape. Okay. Any corrections or additions to those minutes from January 7th?
I was absent, Chairman Nord, so I'm going to abstain from the approval of the minutes.
Okay.
And I'm kind of in the same position. I wasn't here, so I'm not aware of what was going on.
Okay, well.
Leave it up to you guys.
I skimmed through them and I didn't see any errors there, so I'd entertain a motion for approval on those minutes.
Seconded.
Okay, I got the motion, I guess. Mr. Barker's got the second, and I'll call for the vote, please.
Chairman Nord?
Yes.
Commissioner Barker?
Yes.
Commissioner Clemens?
Abstain.
Commissioner Tartaglia?
Abstain.
Okay, and then the building report for the month of December. Anything unusual there, David, or surprising, or extra great, or extra pitiful?
Just continue to point out that we had 90 new home starts this year, which is pretty healthy.
Healthy.
Good. See, we got people moving into self-help homes over there fairly quickly, too, so that's nice. Okay, is there a motion?
I'll move for approval of the building report minutes.
Okay, is there a second?
Second.
Got a second from Ted. Vote, please.
Commissioner Clemens?
Yes.
Commissioner Tartaglia?
Yes.
Commissioner Barker?
Yes.
Chairman Nord?
Yes. Okay, we'll move on to number three on the agenda, which is a public hearing, annexation-related entitlements regarding the Blossom Trail subdivision. Considering a request of the Barsoom Brothers Company for annexation, a variety of things there. We have a staff report, and then we'll have a public hearing on that.
Give a brief staff report and a few slides I'd like to share with you. Francis will turn the light down for just a few minutes. This is the Blossom Trail project. It's located at the southwest corner of Manning Avenue and Zumwalt Avenue. North of the site is outside the city's sphere of influence. The zoning designation is Fresno County AE20, and their existing land use is agriculture. To the south is medium density residential within our general plan. It's currently also in the county zoned AE20, or in one portion of the annexation site is AE20. The other portion is Silas Barch School. To the east is outside of the sphere of influence, zoned AE20 in the county, and agriculture. And to the west is general planned industrial, zoning is AE20, and land use is agriculture. The applications and items you'll be taking action on today are the mitigated negative declaration of environmental impacts, the Manning Zumwalt reorganization annexation 2008-2, general plan and specific plan amendment number 2008-2, change of zone number 304, the Blossom Trail tentative tract map 5942, and two conditional use permits number 448 and number 450. Starting with the annexation, it includes 82.3 acres annexed to Fresno County into the city of Reedley, consisting of four different parcels. The development proposal is on the largest parcel, nearly 40 acres. The Silas Barch School is coming in at the same time, and then two parcels that are currently in ag use will be coming in with the annexation. Following your review and city council review, that annexation request will go to Fresno LAFCO. The general plan and specific plan amendments are taking the existing medium density residential designation and requesting medium density residential, high density residential, commercial neighborhood, and resource conservation and open space. Currently, all medium density residential, changing to medium density residential, high density residential, commercial, and park. The Reedley specific plan amendment also includes a request to the text of the Reedley specific plan to accommodate one component of the project, which is 5,000 square foot lots. Normally our minimum lot size is 6,000 square feet. There's a provision in the Reedley specific plan that says you could have lots down to 5,000 square feet, but it limits it to no more than 20% of the total lots. What's being requested is a change to permit up to 55% of the lots to be 5,000 square foot lots. So the general plan and specific plan amendments are not only to the land use designation, but also to the text of the Reedley specific plan. The change of zone request parallels the general plan amendment request, changing from Fresno County AE20 to Reedley specific plan R1, which is single family residential, Reedley specific plan RM, which is multiple family residential, Reedley specific plan neighborhood commercial, and Reedley specific plan RCO. Again, R1 designation originally changing to single family residential, multifamily residential, commercial, open space, and high-density residential. The subdivision map includes several components. It includes a 24, what the developer's calling lane lot subdivision, which are lots that are 2,440 square feet, 52 medium-density residential lots that are 5,000 square feet, and 44 medium-density residential lots, 42 of which are 6,000 square feet, two are 7,000 square feet. It includes four commercial lots ranging in size from 1 acre to 5 acres, and a high-density residential lot and a half-acre park site. The high-density residential is 2 acres. The medium-density residential single-family lots are located here. The lane lots that are 2,440 square feet are located at the corner of Manning and Zumwalt. The high-density residential site is below the four commercial parcels, and the park site is centrally located to be accessed by all of the single-family residential, the multifamily, and the commercial. This is a blow-up of the commercial site, the park site, and the high-density residential. High-density residential immediately south of the commercial locations, and the park, again, centrally located. A blow-up of the lane lot area. These are the 24 2,440 square foot lots. A blow-up of some of the medium-density residential location and the multifamily. The first use permit is number 448, and that's to accommodate the 24-lot, 2,440-square-foot PUD. As submitted, the project proposal doesn't include floor plans and elevations. The developers provided a layout of how the project can work and is requesting that when a design is ready for the floor plans and the elevations, those will be submitted. A requirement of the conditions of approval is that be submitted prior to final map submittal, and staff supports that request. The other PUD, number 450, is to accommodate the lots that are below the minimum 6,000 square foot designation. The project submittal includes a development agreement that has been reviewed by staff and the city attorney. The Planning Commission is not required to take any action on the development agreement. The development agreement locks in place development impact fees for a specified period of time, defines certain performance standards on the developer's side and on the city's side. Again, you're not required to make a recommendation. That development agreement will go forward with your recommendations to the City Council for their consideration. The development agreement parallels the conditions of approval for your review. So the conditions of approval that you're being asked to take action on today mesh with the development agreement that's been requested. The mitigated negative declaration environmental impacts noted 5 areas of concern: air quality, biological resources, cultural resources, noise, and traffic. The mitigation measures for air quality are standard mitigation measures requested by San Joaquin Valley Air Pollution Control District. Biological resources, there's some consideration with the timing of when development occurs and certain analysis that might be requested. Same cultural resources are standard mitigation measures. Same with noise, timing regarding construction and location of fences for residential development on Manning Avenue. And for traffic is payment of development impact fees and certain improvements to Tobu Avenue. And staff's recommendation is that the Planning Commission recommend approval to the City Council subject to the findings and conditions contained in the attached resolutions. Your recommendation in the development agreement will be moved forward for city council review and consideration. That concludes my report. The Vince DiMaggio, the representative of the project, is in the audience tonight if you have any questions. And I believe the property owner is also in attendance tonight.
Okay, thank you, David. Okay, I'm sure there'll be some questions along the way, but we want to have a public hearing initially here to get folks that might want to speak in favor of it and give whatever additional detail that might be helpful to us as we consider this. So with that, I will open the public hearing on these issues related to the Blossom Trail subdivision. There's a whole list, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 different pieces to this. You can speak to any of those or to all of them in general. We would invite you now to come speak to the commission and audience.
Good evening, commission. My name is Vince DiMaggio. I'm the owner of DW Land Development, who's actually the proponent for this project. We have an agreement with the Barsoom brothers for the eventual purchase of the property. This has been worked on between ourselves and your staff for 2.5 years. We eventually came to your staff in late 2007, and we had an idea, and it started basically with an idea, and we wanted to look at opening up this part of town with commercial services, neighborhood commercial services that we felt were not serving the eastern portion of Reedley, as well as the newer shopping center that's on the western side near the college on the west side of Manning. And we felt that as the city continues to grow, that there needed to be neighborhood commercial in this part of the city, and that's where we kind of started. We also knew that there was a school forthcoming. The school was not built yet when we first started. And it's always been my policy when we do a project to have a hand in the design. And we paid a great deal of attention working with your staff, particularly, and my compliments, by the way, go out to David Berletic, who I've worked with for 2.5 years on this project and been a very enjoyable relationship with him, very productive and just very, very good person to work with. It's great that you have them on the staff. We spent a lot of time really paying attention to the design of the subdivision because we knew that when we established the commercial presence at the location we were looking at, that children would be coming up, students would be coming up from the school. And we paid a great deal of attention working in conjunction with your city engineers and public works department in actually paying attention to the design of the street so that the pedestrian areas were clearly defined and would be separate from the vehicular areas so that the children, the students would have a safe passage through into the commercial center. And I think you'll see that reflected in the site plan. We also put the park centrally located, not only to the whole proposal, but we put it centrally located so that you can grab something to eat at the future shopping center and maybe go over to the park and sit down on a bench and enjoy the open space there. So I know that there probably will be questions as we get into the residential, and so I will tell you the method to our madness behind some of the decisions we made on the residential, particularly in the economic environment that we're in and what we've experienced in this economic downturn that's been going on for a couple of years. We feel that when we talk about the lane lots, it's been our philosophy, it's been my philosophy as I do projects to make sure that all socioeconomic groups in a community can live in the same place. And we'd like to have the bank teller live in the same neighborhood as the bank president. And typically when you think about a 6,000 square foot kind of standard lot that can have a 2,500 square foot, 3,000 square foot house on it, that's typically going to be a higher income individual in your city that can afford that. If you look at the site plan, we have apartments. That might be a single parent. That might be a part-time employee. Eventually, we'll have apartments that are right adjacent to the commercial so that they are in close proximity without even driving to what they need to do. But with the lane lots, this is a unique opportunity to get first-time home buyers back into the market, because there are so many people that have been affected by where we are right now in the economy, that they're going to have to start over. They're going to have to come in, you know, do the equity gain, get into a small home, newly married, young couples, college graduates here that are at the school here, and get them into a product that they can afford. And then as they progress in their careers, they sell, they buy the next lot, and then they literally can live in Reedley and move into larger homes as their needs change. And so that has always been what we want to accomplish in the neighborhoods that we design. So that's kind of a thumbnail sketch taking you through what our thoughts were back in late 2007. And again, working with David and the rest of the city staff, we were able to bring this to fruition. And here we are today in 2010. And be happy to answer any questions for you.
I'm sure we'll have some. If I could just introduce, could you talk a little bit more about the lane lots and what kind of a building goes on there? Single family resident?
Yes, it would be a single family residence.
Multi-floor?
Most likely. In almost all cases, it would probably be a two-story home to get the maximum square footage on there. Yeah.
Garage, off-street parking?
Yes, we've talked a lot about parking with the city staff to make sure we have the proper parking requirements that meet the city standards, and also guest parking. So we've made provisions for that in the lanes for both guest parking and residential parking.
So on a 2,400 square foot lot, what's the footprint of the house itself, or what would be an average?
Yeah, that was one of the questions that the city staff wanted us to provide to them, was the footprint, so that they knew exactly what it was going to look like. So there is an exhibit. I don't know if it's in the staff report, but there is an exhibit that
probably is in here somewhere
that shows the footprint of those lane lots.
In the staff report, there should be an exhibit that shows you the footprint of the maximum building envelope. We've taken into consideration two parking stalls per unit that are covered in the garage. There's additional space for guest parking. And these are all single family detached, meeting standard setback requirements. And then also designating, what was kind of challenging was designating a location for garbage. As things get squeezed, yeah, you're running out of space to put stuff, and garbage was the last hurdle to get over.
Let me see. Could you point out where that might be in the staff report, David?
Yeah, we don't want to.
If it's there, I missed it.
We don't want to get too far in the question and answer at this point. I'd like to proceed with the public hearing, but just a few of the questions that do pop into mind might be well to take care of.
Common wall or separated?
They all of them are separated on the lane lots, yes. Okay. They're all detached.
So similar to a townhouse?
You know, if you think of a townhouse as possibly being connected in some cases, this would be a townhouse, maybe in appearance, but not the connectivity. Okay. It would be detached. Yes.
I've got a question to David. David, would this be similar to our boulevard overlay in the specific plan? Or is this kind of unique?
No, it's unique. The boulevard overlay was specific to duplexes and triplexes.
Okay.
This is using a multifamily density, but building a single family product. So
okay.
We suggested using high density residential, but restricting it to, you need to also include a plan unit development application and specify that you're building this product. I don't see the exhibit that was shared with staff regarding the building envelope.
Okay.
But that would not have been approved tonight. What you're approving is the 2,400 and 40 square foot lot, or that's what's being asked of you tonight.
And the design comes back to us.
The design will come back.
Okay.
Are there any examples of this similar type of building in the area?
Unfortunately, I'm not aware of any in the area. I took my inspiration from two projects. One of is in the city of Salinas, which is nearer to where my home is, and then the other is in the city of Marina, which is not far away from Salinas but on the coast. Both of those cities have projects where this lane lot concept worked very, very well. It's very popular and it worked very well, and it actually it's a great looking project. It's hard to visualize until it's actually on the ground, but it's a great looking project. And there was particular emphasis, attention was paid to the actual construction of the lanes. In this case, they used brick, and it made for a very nice aesthetic. It worked very well. So, yeah, there are examples that we took our inspiration from.
Okay, we may have further questions for you. We thank you, though, for that. Anyone else want to speak in relation to this project?
Good evening. My name is Mark Garza. I'm the Director of Construction for Kings Canyon Unified School District. On behalf of the school district, we do not object to the annexation nor the project itself. We do have some concerns that we always raise as development goes. We support development in the community because it's a good thing for communities. However, the impact towards our schools are significant. Whenever you have high density homes, there's a lot more students we have to have room for. Currently, Silas Barch is adjacent to that. We're already busting at the seams with future growth just within our district. So a new project will add capacity to our district. So we're gonna have to look at new construction at some point. Right now, currently, we're looking at about a 10-year growth pattern with the housing development that we have on the docket, and which would require a school within the next anywhere between 5 to 10 years, depending on when the market starts to take off. We are not opposed to the project. We'd like to work with the developer and with the city. We've already been working with the city on this project. But we would like to make sure that we have the in-lane or crosswalks that are lighted to protect our students as they're walking. We're looking for neighborhood schools, so all of that means we want them to walk, and we want them to be safe. So a lot of the those aspects, we'd like to work with the developer in the city to make sure all those things are in. You know, they do pay developer fees. However, that's never enough to build a school. We always end up short and cutting all the nice things that we'd like to have in schools, like computers. So it is a good project. We look forward towards the annexation process as well. That's going to benefit Cy Barch. So again, we just thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you. Anyone else? Hearing none, I will close the public hearing. We can ask you after that for on questions, but your time for simply comments will be closed, so don't hesitate to speak up now. Okay, with that, we'll close the public hearing then and bring it back to commissioners for discussion on each of these pieces. The mitigated negative declaration of environmental impacts, we've had a chance to review. I think we saw this several months ago and discussed it a bit then, but not in very great detail. But commissioners, in relation to that negative declaration, any questions or comments of staff or of anyone here at this time?
I had a question as relates to the noise mitigation. I'll have to apologize because I didn't have the opportunity to peruse this negative deck quite as thoroughly as I would like. But one thing I noticed is that I think it applies mainly to the 24 lane lots facing Manning or fronting Manning Avenue. It talks about a rather than a solid mitigation measure, a kind of hiring a consultant to develop construction standards for those lots and what type of materials will be used in the noise mitigation. And I'm fairly conservative in that area, and that I believe a bird in the hand is worth two in the bush. And a lot of this seems to be, it's a promise to mitigate without any really concrete mitigation that I can see at this time. Now, perhaps you could explain that a little bit.
Certainly, Commissioner. We wanted to, working with staff in the design of the project, we really wanted to avoid, and we thought it would be, an aesthetic effect to the community, not to just go with the standard, block wall. We wanted to do something different. Our proposal originally called for, I believe, David, it was a wrought iron fence. And then, obviously, all of us know Manning's a very busy street, and it carries a lot of traffic, and some of that is truck traffic. And so I would tell you that a wrought iron fence that's see-through is not going to mitigate noise. So it's not, again, because of the way the lots are placed, I don't think that a wood fence would be adequate either. So that leaves us with very few opportunities. So then, as I recall, David and I looked at a berm, an earthen berm with a small block wall on top of it. So you just weren't massing a block wall on Manning and create this tunneling effect. And so we looked at several different things. I understand that the language is not, is not strong, I guess, would be the word I would use. And I certainly understand your concern. And I just am trying to avoid that 8-foot block wall is all. I'm certainly open on what we could use if the condition that you're referring to is not adequate, just trying to avoid that block wall. And we may not be able to. Yeah.
But I guess that will come back when you submit a site plan for those those housings.
The conditions of approval require that the floor plans and elevations for the PUD are going to come back for your approval.
Okay.
We could strengthen the language about the analysis or consultant work to say that has to be done prior to issuance of building permit. I think what you can see in the design, the Reedley specific plan discourages use of block walls. So wherever possible, we're trying to get away from that, but it complicates things when you're putting that density up next to Manning Avenue.
Right.
But to have a more solid mitigation measure, we can state that needs to be done prior to issuance of a building permit. And then that's going to come back with the floor plans and elevations for the PUD prior to the final map.
Okay. Good point.
Yeah, I think that would satisfy me. I have one more question. It's unrelated. What approximate size do you envision on those the structures on the lane lot?
Sure. No, we think we can, we know that the size of the homes will be probably in the 12 to 1500 square foot range.
Okay. Other commissioners, anything on that mitigated environmental issues there? Any old wells on there? I know one of the conditions is to cap, and
if there is, it would have to be removed in accordance with the Fresno cap.
Yeah.
I think there probably is. I think there was a phase one that was prepared that would tell us whether or not there is.
Yeah.
That would be addressed.
Well, I think I noticed one right along Manning Avenue. And then there's one
on Zumwalt.
I think it's back if you take the road by Seibart School there in the back. I think there's a well back there next to that undergrounded pipeline that I noticed.
No, there's no well. The only other well is where the buildings are, mm-hmm. A small domestic size well.
It looked like there was something over there, like a standpipe with a pump attached to the top of it.
That is actually on the other side of the ditch, and that feeds the other.
I'm going to have to ask Mr. Barsoom to come to the microphone if he'd like to provide any testimony.
You need it recorded?
I'm getting dirty looks, oh. Starling.
The only pumps that I'm aware of is the one on Manning about the middle of the property on the north, and a small, I would say, domestic pressure system that was originally there for the buildings at that time. I don't believe there are any other existing wells on that piece.
That kind of bears out what I saw. You mentioned the one across the where the ditch is underground, and that's where the other one I noticed was. It's on the west side of where that ditch was underground. Yeah.
It's really not a well. That's just a electric motor that pulls and pressurizes the ditch water. It's not a well.
Have any of these wells been tested for contamination or of any type so that we don't get 5 years into the project and find out that we've got stuff there that we don't want?
Yes, there has been what's called a phase one and a phase two. And there has been a soils analysis as part of the subdivision map. There's very little contamination. There's surface contamination near Zumwalt, where the older buildings are. There are mitigation measures that direct us on how to exactly remedy that situation, which we will certainly implement and comply with.
Okay, anything else on environmental issues here? I think what I'd like to do is move through a discussion on each one of these and then go back and vote on each one of them individually, too. I believe we need to do that, so.
I had a question as it relates to G. Are you going to discuss each one individually and then go back and vote on each one individually? Is that your plan?
Yeah, let's go down in order, kind of, and then we can... Okay. Okay. Any further question, commissioners, on the negative declaration? We can bring that back up later if something sparks a question, but we'll want to move through. Number B is the reorganization annexation number 2008-1, which... that's fairly cut and dry, too. I mean, we're moving from ag land to...
Are those, can I ask Rob, are those in order as we're going down this list for discussion? Are they in order up there in your presentation?
They were on the presentation, yes.
Could
maybe
you flip
you
back to
pop
that?
Pop it to B, 3B, and we can use that as a reference as we go through this. Okay, so there's the annexation.
The proposed development, obviously, is concerned with development of the roughly 40-acre site for their project. In discussions with Fresno County and Fresno LAFCO, they've directed that they want to see the school site come in along with these other parcels.
So there's connectivity. It doesn't become an island.
So this has been commented on by Fresno County and Fresno LAFCO, and this is the annexation.
And the old Salwasser property stays outside? It's not part of the city, is it?
The current city limits are the old Salwasser property.
Yeah. So they're still county.
Everything in gray is...
No, they're city.
Oh, they are city. Okay.
This is all in the city limits today.
Okay.
I might have a better exhibit to share with you. You can barely make it out. The red line here is the city limit line.
Okay.
You see it labeled.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Pretty straightforward. And LAFCO would require that because they don't want an island to exist, correct?
And these other parcels, the school will come in zoned for school purposes. The other parcels will come in pre-zoned as noted on the existing general plan and release specific plan.
Then the connectivity of the street will not occur until such time as development comes to those two connecting parcels then?
Any streets running east-west?
Mm-hmm.
Correct.
And the services for the development are coming from where at this point? Where will they connect? Will they connect on the TOBU right-of-way that's serving the school?
We won't have complete answers until we get to final map phase, but there are services in Manning Avenue and coming from the south and at Silas Barch School.
Right. Okay.
The parcel number 37, that is, will stay as zoned as residential? I think that's what you showed.
It will be medium density residential.
Right. Now that, if I'm not mistaken, that's owned by whoever it is that owns the Salwasser property now.
I believe that's changed hands. It was purchased several years back.
Right. It's Thiele is involved.
It's not owned by Thiele.
Well, it's a different name, but that's one of the names on it. But did they still own that 10-acre parcel?
No, they do not. This was purchased by an individual interested in developing the property at some point in the future. So
they
had originally
been
owned by this piece and the piece to the north were all owned by Salwasser and then the subsequent operators of the Salwasser plant. But this 10-acre piece has since been sold independent of the...
Okay, well, that answers my question on that.
Okay, letter B, the Manning Zumwalt reorganization. Any further questions on that specifically? If not, we'll move to letter C there, the general plan, specific plan amendment, number 2008-2, resolution 2010-8.
My question would be the size or the number of apartments on that 2-acre parcel.
Go ahead, please.
It's being pre-zoned RMSP, which is multiple family residential, and that is a minimum 2,000 square feet per dwelling unit. So you've got 2 acres. It's roughly a density of 20 units per acre. So the maximum would be 40 that could fit on there and meet the development standards.
High density housing is seldom as attractive as other types of density, no matter how much we try. Because in the perfect world, you're right, the entry level person who wants to buy for the first time goes and buys in there. But we all know that there's some varieties on that happen. And we know there were some risks involved in that too, that the people have to live with long after our vote is cast.
My question would be, how would this be impacting the school district with the, it was presented before the commission that if this new project goes in, the 80 units south of town, they would also be attending the Barch School, and with this high density, just how much would it be impacting the school district?
With high density, you usually have more kids in that concentrated area. So at this point in time, even though Cy Barch is new, we are already reaching our maximum capacity at that site. So as these new developments come in, we will have to look at other measures to house those students. So we may have to do some shuffling with transporting our students from one site to the next. And it takes us away from the neighborhood school that we're trying to construct throughout the district. So, you know, we're going to have to forecast a lot of those things as they come out. You know, as the construction comes in, we're going to look at that new school within the next 5 to 10 years.
It's a challenge for the school district, but from a mitigation perspective, all that the city can do with regard to that issue is require the payment of school impact fees. Understanding that it's not enough for the school district to do their job, but from a mitigation perspective, that's all we can require.
And I agree with David, they do pay their fees. However, in school construction, it is never enough. You know, you have a bare bones school that doesn't have the technology in order to educate our students the way we would like to. Thank you.
David, review with us too, because we're talking about 5,000 square foot lots, and there was a limit the city had in place, or a limit that was spoken to, that this exceeds the percentage.
The really specific plan to encourage density said our standard lot size is 6,000 square feet. But the really specific plan that was reviewed by the Planning Commission and City Council said, let's move forward to preserve agriculture and increase density. Let's move forward and allow up to 20% of the lots in the subdivision to be down to 5,000 square feet. That was adopted in 2001. Prior to the blueprint and prior to a movement towards density, and prior to the housing catastrophe. So this is moving with the market trends, moving with out in front of the blueprint and saying 5,000 square foot lots looks like that might be what we're ratcheting down to be able to build standard single family detached homes. That's what everybody wants. There was some mention of the what size homes are going to go on the lane lots. We had approved subdivisions that were 6,000 and 7,000 and 8,000 square foot in size that didn't have a restriction on the size of the home you could build. When the market was booming, they were building 2,100 plus square foot homes. As it changed, the developers came in with new floor plans and built homes down to 1,500 square feet. So you're then having to get to a price point that works for the market, you've got inefficient lot sizes out there just to reduce the cost of building a smaller product. This is going to get supposed to get the efficiency that you want to get out of the subdivision. The really specific plan sought to build 5 units per acre, and we thought that was a leap in density. The blueprint that was adopted by all of us is looking for, I believe, scenario B that was adopted is over 8 units per acre. This proposal, even with the lane lots, is not 8 units per acre. So we're not achieving the blueprint density, but we're going to the really specific plan density, and we're doing quite a bit more than surrounding communities. So we could point to our good faith effort to doing what's expected of us from a development perspective.
So we're going to be leaders.
We're going to try. But
the
really specific plan currently permits up to 20% of the lots to be down to 5,000 square feet. The request before you today is to allow up to 55% of the lots to be down to 5,000.
That's square on 3G, correct, for the conditional use permit?
No, that is on C. That is the really specific plan amendment in general.
Okay, I stepped out. Okay, so are you actually saying then that you're proposing to change the specific plan language permanently at this point from 20 to 55%?
Correct.
And does this changing of the specific plan, is it necessary for this approval of this project? Because in my mind, I'm thinking I'd like to revisit that a little bit. I don't have a problem doing a conditional use permit to allow this project to be at the 55% level, but knowing how much time went into the specific plan, almost 2 years, I personally kind of like to chat about this a little bit more than
It was a unique proposal to the city, and we approached it from, let's look at modifying the Reedley specific plan, and let's also look at the conditional use permit. From staff's perspective, if we're going to entertain reducing the minimum lot size.
For one, you're going to have to do it for all future projects.
From staff's perspective, we want that to become a standard, not just on a case-by-case basis.
Okay. And they could still, if they choose to put 20%, of a future development at
20, 30, 40.
That level, they can pick anywhere in between to fit the okay,
they can build, can do all 6,000 square feet, or they can go up to 55%, can be down to 5,000 square feet.
I guess from my perspective, if a future development came in and they wanted the whole thing at 55% and not have mixed use, I
If they wanted to build all 5,000 square foot lots, we'll come back before you and
do a site review.
Discuss it and make a recommendation.
Got it. Okay.
And we would probably have some kind of track record by then to see.
Exactly.
The proposal before you represents the Reedley specific plan goals and objectives.
Good.
It's unique in that we have not seen anything like this before. That's why
it looks so unusual. Where it's the mixed use.
We specifically said mm-hmm. we wanted to see a mix of lot sizes and housing types in the same project. And that's exactly what you see before mm-hmm. you today. And understandably, it's new to us. So
right.
We're willing to discuss it as much as you need.
How many square feet are there in a half acre?
43,560 divided by 2. So that would be 21 something.
I'm trying to compare the size of the park with the size of a 6,000 square foot lot or a 5,000 square foot lot.
It's about 4 lots, probably. We had worked with what we were calling pocket parks that were a single lot that were anywhere from 8 to 10,000 square feet. And in retrospect, we don't think it's not a good idea from a maintenance perspective, and they don't seem to be very functional or usable. This half acre site should be usable. It's closer to, it's half the size of the Columbia Park site, but two to two and a half times the size of what you may call a pocket park in some of the newer subdivisions.
What is it, Plum Tree Estates, the one on the south part of town over near Walgreens? What size would that be? Is that an acre or? That just down from Walgreens on, is that Columbia?
On Columbia, yeah, that one's an acre.
That's an acre.
So this will be about half that size. It's more similar to the park site in the Centex Home subdivision at mm-hmm. Button Willow and Parlier in area.
They make great bus stops.
But not much more.
You know, I see neighborhood kids playing in the one on Carpenter.
Oh, yeah, they play
there. You know, they do play there. That's,
but if they can hit a baseball anywhere, it's going to be out in the street.
Oh, yeah. That's always better.
I mean, just distance. You get in the far corner back there. And left field is pretty close.
And this park is designed basically for the project use?
It's
rather than
serve,
general public.
It's intended to serve the, it's a neighbor, it's for the neighborhood, which includes the commercial development. So as Mr. DiMaggio stated, design-wise, I'd like to mm-hmm. include amenities that may attract any kind of fast food or restaurant type uses that are in the commercial can use the park to sit down and have lunch. The adjacent multifamily could use it. And the adjacent single family can use it.
Okay, my question was just about parking for that. If people from outside the community come in, they would have to park probably along in the commercial parking lots or something.
It does not include parking. It's not a regional park or any kind of specific use park. It's for neighborhood use. So it's not intended to provide parking for people coming from outside the area. There should be no amenities.
Walk to it. It's the connectivity we talked about in the specific
destination.
No fencing. No fencing around the park.
No.
Maybe some fencing somewhere for some purpose, but the site is not going to be fenced.
The site's not. Okay, anything else on the general plan's specific plan amendment relating to these lot size in particular? Anything else within that we might want to look at?
I'm good.
Okay, maybe the changes there. Letter D, the change of zone number 304. That can't be too big a thing because we're
just going from ag to the commercial and the various components that are within the right. development. Now, are we the other pieces that are going from ag that are not related to this, we're going to the medium density you said earlier?
Correct.
Okay.
Okay, any specific questions on that? Change of zone? Okay. If not, we'll move to E, the Blossom Trail Tentative Subdivision Map, Resolution 2010-10.
Put it up on the board there.
Street widths, sir, David, on the standard interior streets, sir?
They're the standard Reedley specific plan street width, which I believe is 35 feet curb to curb. It's what you've seen in the new subdivisions that have been built over the last 5 years.
So it'd be consistent with that, that's like a generation home to the south?
Correct, with the setback sidewalk and the landscape strip and street trees.
No, we don't have any islands down the middle with the exception of possibly Tobu?
And possibly in North Avenue.
Okay.
In front of the school site.
No bike lanes, no at least marked bike lanes.
I'm not sure if there's a marked bike lane on North.
I wouldn't think.
Not at this time. Tobu, however, is designated as a future bike lanes in the future. Mm-hmm. There is going to be, by the way, a trail, a pedestrian trailway along the west side over the existing irrigation pipeline where David Berletic is now pointing.
Oh, okay.
That would be north of the school.
This is the existing school site. The school site will be annexed in. North Avenue will be built. Tobu Avenue will be built to here. With annexation of other parcels in the future, we've got a... The furthest development north coming from Dinuba Avenue is Generation Home Subdivision. The school site is right here. Until these properties develop in here, you will not have connectivity to Tobu Avenue. When we do have connectivity to Tobu Avenue is designated as a bike lane.
Mm-hmm.
When there's enough to do a project, we'll start considering development of the pedestrian pathway on the west side of Tobu Avenue.
You did say there would be room for a bike lane over that pipeline.
Yes.
Okay. And that would separate the bike, actually separate the bike traffic from the street, which is probably a good idea.
What's the one street running north to south there on the, no, farther over here?
Tobu. Oh,
that's Tobu.
Okay. Which way do those houses face going down there? Which way do they face? Do they face out to Tobu or into the?
They face into the interior street.
The interior.
So how do we, what do we have, some kind of a wall along there or?
A double fronting lot and there will be a piece of a wall here.
Mm-hmm.
These homes front Zumwalt Avenue, and these front North Avenue, and these front the new interior street.
Mm-hmm. If I can just add to that, the reason why we did that is that we were able to only have that wall for only four or five lots. Everything else we were able to actually avoid the wall on the perimeter of the site.
I like the idea of getting away from as many walls as possible, especially especially on that side of town.
Well, seeing Mike Pardo over there talking about something, I'll point out he probably has concerns with the flag lots, which we discourage. But as you're, we'll call it compromising, to get away from extensive use of walls, you're going to start to see the need to do more things that if we had our, if there were a way, we'd like to get rid of the flag-shaped lot. But to accommodate the design, we can live with the two flag-shaped lots. We've gotten rid of walls along here and here for the project, and that's quite a trade-off.
Were those two flagships those large 7,000 that I saw mentioned in there?
I'm not sure if they're the 7,000.
Yes, they are. So. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I could see where, you know, for a consumer, that might be an attractive size lot and something that would be desirable.
Flag lots are actually very desirable to consumers. Yeah. We don't do too many of them because of what David just said.
Right. But it'll be interesting to see the design concept on that.
Okay. Letter E is the subdivision map. Any more questions specifically to that one?
None here.
Okay, and then letter F is the conditional use permit, which is 2010-11.
And that's for the Lane Lot PUD.
You know, one thing I'd like to say about this, to maybe ease your concern, is, as David has pointed out, we are required to come back and show you the elevations and the specs on that. And I certainly want to put your mind at ease and would commit to bringing actual photographs of projects, built projects that show this concept along with our elevations, so that when you consider the elevations, you'll actually have examples in front of you as to how it will look.
Good.
Chairman Nord, I'd just like to point out for the record that the public hearing's closed. Anything you'd like to ask of Mr. DiMaggio, you're asking him as an applicant, and that's fine.
Right. Okay. We'll do. So stay close, but I'll. One of the questions that comes up in my mind in relation to lane lots and the small lot set out there, and even the unit built on it, is a city as a whole, I don't think, is really has a good plan in place for enforcement of some of the things that keep our community looking good. Extra cars that are parked in places for extended times, motorhomes, trailers, whatnot. Now, we treat all that stuff basically on a complaint basis,
mm-hmm.
which is a bit irritating to me, I gotta admit. One of the things you create here is when you create an apartment house, you have a manager. And the manager, at least, is the person who is to oversee the care and situation that goes on within that apartment house. Within a tight subdivision like this, you don't have any manager. Your police become the manager. Your neighbor becomes the manager. And so that, I got to admit, that concerns me. When we pack people closer together, whether we need to, we feel like we need to, whether we want to, whether we're doing it for economics or whatever we do, but we better know we're walking in the door to a situation that the tighter we live, the more problems that develop. And so I think this is something, we better really consider carefully. I know the concept. I like the concept. If I knew, you know, if any of us, or if we could be guaranteed that, you know, only three people are going to live in the house, or four people are going to live in the house, and that they're not going to have junk in the yard and all those kind of things, without you know, having to be reminded of it by their neighbor. I just know neighbor complaints don't work very well anyway. Nobody likes to complain about their neighbor, and yet many times the neighbor needs a complaint. So that's my question about the line lots. The conceptual part I love. You know, I'd like to offer that to the newlywed couple, to the single folks that might be going to wherever, Ridley College, whatever.
Staff has the same concern in that review, and looking at adequate parking for what we know we're going to get. It's not going to be one parking stall per home. Making sure there's room for the garbage cans. The floor plans and elevations are going to come back. You have an opportunity to look at that. There's also a requirement for a homeowners association that's going to define how they need to perform neighbor to neighbor. That's not something the city can police, but that's something that we can require be put in place so that we at least get them off to a good start.
Is that like CCNRs?
It's more than CCNRs. There's a homeowners association. That
so it's like a condominium or a townhouse, and so they're not mowing the lawn. That's part of the association. Care for the PUD is under that.
Yes, Commissioner. I was just going to seek recognition to bring that up. I think when you have an HOA, it's a little bit different than your neighbor looking at his private property and saying, the guy's got too many cars. Mm-hmm. They actually they pay into it. They have a vested interest to make sure, because everything around them affects their home, their equity, everything. And they're paying. I mean, it's hitting them in the pocketbook when you pay to maintain an HOA. So they are, I think it's been my experience that when you have an HOA or a landscape and lighting district or some sort of assessment district, that there's an awful lot of, you know, you better get that cleaned up if there's any problem at all. So I think that's the safety valve you may be looking for in this case.
And so as a result of that HOA and the fact that they have a homeowners association, there's typically a realtor
there's an administrator,
an outside entity that manages that, almost similar to an apartment.
Right.
That makes me feel better already.
See, I knew George would be warm and fuzzy there.
I've seen a few of those, and sometimes they're more restrictive than any city enforcement. They get a little brutal sometimes.
You've seen and reviewed PUDs, planned unit developments in this community, but they were more the gated community that had certain amenities that went with it. That had it's the exact same vehicle to create that unique lot shape. What's different about this is there's maybe a little bit smaller.
Two-story.
There's no gate amenity necessarily that this is being sold for. You're using the planned unit development process to get a density for a reason, but have the same benefit of the homeowners association to control or manage what's happening on the site.
Okay, I do feel better.
Well, I think by not having it gated and having it connected to that whole project, it gives it a sense of community. It's not separated, and that's the whole theory behind the specific plan, to stay connected.
The really specific plan actually has a statement in it that says it discourages gated communities.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't discourage PUDs. It discourages gated communities.
One of the things a gated community would have, though, would usually be some kind of a center, I'll call it a community center, a recreation building, a social hall, whatever.
Recreation building, a pool,
which this kind of setup will not have. I mean, they don't even have their own little park or a green space there.
Down the street.
I think the concept is to use the
public. Close the streets off and we'll meet out in the street, right? Okay. That works most of the time in our weather. Not this week, but most other weeks. Okay, any other questions on 2010-11? Okay, let's move to the letter G then, the conditional use permit 2010-12.
That's also addressing the 5,000 square foot lots.
Right.
If you're not inclined to go with staff's direction, which is if you're going to permit 5,000 square foot lots, let's do that really specific plan wide. Or if you're looking to do it through planning and development, that's what CUP 450 accomplishes.
And David, when you talk about the blueprint, you're talking about the Great Valley Center blueprint, is that correct? Or am I thinking?
The San Joaquin Valley.
San Joaquin blueprint. Valley blueprint for all the cities to be consistent. Okay.
I think we'll get some bonus points if we do this first.
Probably.
All of the discussion is that when we get to the next level, going before Fresno LAFCO, mm-hmm. Having agencies like Fresno County weigh in on what we're doing, we get to say, well, we're following the direction that we've all agreed we want to follow, and we don't need to come up with an explanation of why we're coming forward with a subdivision of 12,000 square foot lots. Mm-hmm.
Trying to do the math in my head, but if we were to ask or require that all lots be 6,000 square feet, how many fewer lots would we have in that proposed?
Did you have those numbers in your head?
it would be over a dozen. And
how many 5,000 square foot lots are there?
There are 52 of the 96. So if
52, five,
it would change the design. So it's not necessarily going to instantly switch over. But if you're doing 96 single family lots in this highlighted area, you'd be allowed to do, I don't know if we round up or down. We'll round up just to be nice and call it 20. You'd be doing 20 instead of 52. So you have 32 that you wouldn't get to do at 5,000 square feet.
So we can't make as much money, huh?
Well, and you probably, as we know, can't qualify that many people for homes at that.
That's the other consideration. What is the opportunity out there today for new home construction? Are we can insist that we only approve certain size lots with assumed certain size homes, but there may not be a market for that. Mr. DiMaggio is here today telling you that he's successful in building new homes and other development throughout the valley, and he believes this is a product that there's going to be, if there's not a demand for it today, this is what soon. There will be a demand for, and thinks this is a good use of that property.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure you've been in touch with lenders, and they are looking at lower or smaller size lots in the future. There's more of a market for a 5,000 versus a 6,000, at least as a starter.
It's a market necessity. The fact is that for a developer, the land is the costliest piece of the equation. So if we're trying to get down to a sales price on a house that people can afford at this point, looking at the past 2 years and how we move forward, because the land is the most expensive part of the development game, if you will, you're seeing a move towards 5,000 as a vehicle to continue to get people to afford homes. And in this particular case, certainly not everything in that shaded area is 5,000. Not all. In fact, we have got 5,000s next to 6,000s, and in the case of the flag lots, next to 7,000. So again, it's that intent on my part to put different home types and different people with different incomes next to each other and build the sense of community, so that the person that does have that 5,000 square foot lot next to you, sure, maybe he's an entry level professional, doesn't quite make as much money as that bank president that lives in the 6,000 on a house in a 6,000 square foot lot next door, but it's that sense of community that brings them all together. So we didn't want to come to you certainly and say, well, there's the corner of the site with all of the 5,000s and here's the rest of the site with the 6,000s. We wanted to make the proposal to go above your specific plan, your current specific plan limits, and try and achieve those densities that your specific plan calls out for. But we also wanted to be cognizant of the importance of spreading those lots in and among your normal 6,000 square foot lots.
On all of these lots, I need to point out this area is the subject of CUP 4504 for planned unit development. And that only addresses accommodating the 5,000 square foot lots. There's no other request. Whether the lot's 5, 6, or 7,000 square feet, this is all to be built to really specific plan standards for standard single family homes, meaning standard garage requirements, standard setback requirements.
The porch.
It's a little bit smaller, but it is this is to accommodate standard single family homes built to really specific plan standards. So you from the street, you may see the exact same home model on the 7,000 square foot lot or 6,000 square foot lot that you see on the 5,000 square foot lot. And again, back to the Reedley specific plan, that's what we wanted to try to achieve. Comparable homes, they may vary in lot size and home size on the same block, and mm-hmm. that's working in that direction. But they're not, there's no request to deviate from development standards with the reduction to the 5,000 square foot lot. It still meets Reedley specific plan standards.
Would the developer be doing any of the landscaping? And because there could be quite a difference between a 7,000 and a 5,000 square foot lot in terms of one person, they're, you know, put a palm tree right in the middle of their front yard, and the next person puts a redwood in, and so on and so forth. Yeah, so we wouldn't want.
We would maintain control over the landscaping in the front yards of all the units. Yes.
What does that mean? We would maintain control.
We would do it.
Okay.
With the subdivision development, most CCNRs are requiring, they're installing the landscaping with the new home, and that needs to be completed, usually written in a way that is completed prior to occupancy. So all the front yard landscaping is done. Backyard landscaping isn't typically done with new subdivisions, but you'll see consistency in the front yard when the subdivision's built. There probably isn't anything in place that's going to keep that from changing over time, but when it's developed, it's going to be consistent.
Which means that the street trees are going to be conforming.
The street trees are in public right-of-way and are going to be consistent.
Conforming to the specific plan trees that correct. Are on the selection list.
Correct.
But there's probably no way to stop somebody from taking some type of an ornamental tree and replacing it with a palm tree 5, 10 years down the road.
Probably not.
If he wants
in the front yard or in the landscape?
In the front yard.
Landscape strip?
In the front yard. I mean, the really no way to control that.
We got at least one realtor here tonight. I'd be interested in hearing, do you see this type of layout being attractive for many?
If you're going to ask Mr. Shule any
questions, Mr. Shule,
he's going to have to come to the...
Would you step up there a second? I suppose you were here partly because you want to sell some of these anyway. You see this as an attractive to have the 5,000 extra to the 6 or the...
The key is affordability, and that's what the developer's trying to achieve. So there's the market's very price sensitive, so the lower the price, the more buyers. There's a market for everything. There's a market for this lot. There's a market for larger lots. There's just a bigger market for the smaller lots. Did that answer your question?
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah, it's a little vague on purpose, maybe, but.
I felt a lot better after I heard about the homeowners association, but the rest of them with the 5,000 square foot lot, which is, I think I live on about an 8,000 square foot lot, and it seems small to me sometimes.
And there's others in when it probably feels like it's too much yard to take care of.
Right? Yeah, but I can get a goat or something to mow the lawn for me.
I don't know. You're limited on the number of chickens now in town, right?
I think we can grow marijuana, chickens. For goodness sake.
For clandestine. Municipal purposes. Medicinal.
Is not medicinal.
I kind of like
purpose.
The way that medicinal. The lots are dispersed, though. More concerned if they were grouped.
Yeah,
so I think
not,
maybe this is a better alternative.
Oh, yeah, I would agree with that. And the difference between a 5,000 square foot lot and a 6,000 is obviously 1,000 square feet. But, you know, from the street, it probably won't look a lot different.
No. We can put it in the specific plan now, or at some point it's going to be mandated by the state, right?
Well, they're telling us what else to do so much. I don't know why they wouldn't tell us that.
Darlene's giving me more dirty looks. you know, we're going through a general plan update. What you're experiencing right now, you're probably going to see some recommendations from staff working that direction citywide.
Right.
Okay, are we ready to move on? Go back and look at each one of these for approval or denial?
Sure.
Any other questions there? Anything else, staff, for our perusal? When will this go to the city council? Do you have an idea?
Possibly February 9th.
Okay, commissioners, let's go back to letter A, the negative declaration. I don't know why I can't say that. That's a hard word to say for some reason. Mitigated negative declaration of environmental impact.
Yep. Okay, so there we are.
Okay, is there any entertaining motion on that one?
I will, Chairman Nord, I will move for approval of resolution number 2010-6 for the mitigated negative deck.
Before we move on to... Ted, you had that suggestion before. Was that which one was that related to?
That was on the, well, that would be the mitigated negative deck on the.
On the wall.
The wall or the sound mitigation.
Right.
On construction.
If you would like language modified to state that that be done prior to issuance of a building permit, that can be right. added.
Strengthen the language there some way.
Ted, had that. Would you like to include that?
Yes. Please.
So we have a motion with including the wall issue there. Is there a second on that?
I'll second.
Got a second. Any further discussion? Call for the vote, please.
Who was it who seconded?
Barker.
Was it Commissioner Barker?
Barker. Mr. Barker, yes.
Commissioner Clements?
Yes.
Commissioner Barker?
Yes.
Commissioner Tartaglia?
Yes.
Chairman Nord?
Yes. Okay, and then the reorganization annexation 2008-1.
We'll move that we accept 2008-1.
Here we have a motion. Is there a second?
I'll go ahead and second that.
Okay, a second. Any further discussion? Call for the vote, please.
Commissioner Barker?
Yes.
Commissioner Clements?
Yes.
Commissioner Tartaglia?
Yes.
Chairman Nord?
Yes. Okay, the general plan specific man amendment, plan amendment 2008-2. This is the one that
amends the specific plan.
Amends the specific plan, right.
Having a clear understanding of it now, I will move for approval of amendment to number 2008-2, which is resolution 2010-8.
Okay, we have a motion. Is there a second?
I'll second it.
Do we have a second? Any further discussion? Okay, call for the vote, please.
Commissioner Clements?
Yes.
Commissioner Tartaglia?
Yes.
Commissioner Barker?
Yes.
Chairman Nord?
Yes. Letter D, change of zone 304, number 304, resolution 2010-9.
Also move that we accept 2010-9.
Okay, is there a second?
I'll go ahead and second that.
Any further discussion? Call for the vote, please.
Commissioner Barker?
Yes.
Commissioner Clements?
Yes.
Commissioner Tartaglia?
Yes.
Chairman Nord?
Yes. Resolution 2010-10, which is the subdivision map track.
I'll move for approval of the Blossom Trail tentative subdivision map track number 5942, resolution 2010-10.
I'll second it.
Yeah, motion to second. Any further discussion? Call for the vote, please.
Commissioner Clements?
Yes.
Commissioner Tartaglia?
Yes.
Commissioner Barker?
Yes.
Chairman Nord?
Yes. And the conditional use permit number 448, resolution 2010-11.
Move for approval.
Second.
Any further discussion? Call for the vote, please.
Commissioner Tartaglia?
Yes.
Commissioner Barker?
Yes.
Commissioner Clements?
Yes.
Chairman Nord?
Yes. And letter G, conditional use permit number 450, resolution 2010-12.
I'll move to approve that one, Francis.
Who was it who moved to approve the previous one?
I think I was first and Ted was second on letter F.
Right, correct.
Okay, I'll change that.
Ted's got letter G.
Ted's first on G and we're waiting for a second.
I'll second it.
Okay, any further discussion? Call for the vote, please.
Commissioner Tartaglia?
Yes.
Commissioner Barker?
Yes.
Commissioner Clements?
Yes.
Chairman Nord?
Yes. Okay, looks like you got our blessing, fellas. See whether it works at the next step. It may not be so easy there, but.
make us happy with the development.
Do our best.
Exactly.
Okay, the only other thing is commission comments and reports. Anything for the good of the cause? Questions of staff?
Date for opening Fresh and Easy, is anybody?
Paper said February 24th, I read to one time.
Paper knows everything.
I don't know if it was our good paper here, but I think I saw it. One of them.
Cool.
John's really anxious for that.
My wife wants to know.
Okay, anything else on the horizon, David, that we'd like to hear about?
We don't have anything for our February 4th Planning Commission date, but we can have some items available for you on the 18th if you're available to meet on the alternate date.
Okay.
So at this point, nothing on February 4th. Could that change, or are you anticipating?
No, that can't change.
Okay.
It's too late to notice anything. We can meet noticing requirements for some items that we can bring before you on the 18th if you're available.
So we're planning on the 18th, at least 10 hours, huh? Okay, anything else for the good of the cause? If not, we'll adjourn this meeting. Thank you.